During April, in observance of National Poetry Month, we are broadcasting a series of poems related to war. Last week, we began with two ancient poems that dealt with the pain of armed conflict. This week, we present a more romantic view of war from one of America's best-known poets. In 1861, during the first days of the Civil War, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow published a poem that looked back to the American Revolution for inspiration. His poem became an overnight sensation. Massachusetts historian Jane Triber reads Paul Revere's Ride.
Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One if by land and two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be, ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm, for the country folk to be up and to arm." Then he said, "Good night," and with muffled oar silently rowed to the Charlestown shore. Just as the moon rose over the bay, where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset, British man of war. A phantom ship with each mast and spar across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile his friend through alley and street wanders and watches with eager ears, till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore. Then he climbed to the tower of the church, up the wooden stairs with stealthy tread to the belfry chamber overhead, and startled the pigeons from their perch on the somber rafters that round him made masses and moving shapes of shade, up the trembling ladder, steep and tall, to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath in the churchyard lay the dead, in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear, like a sentinel's tread, the watchful night wind as it went creeping along from tent to tent, and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour, and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead. For suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away, where the river widens to meet the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred with a heavy stride, on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now gazed at the landscape far and near, then impetuous stamped the earth, and turned and tightened his saddle girth. But mostly he watched with eager search the belfry tower of the old North Church, as it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral and somber and still. And lo, as he looks, on the belfry's height, a glimmer and then a gleam of light. He springs to the saddle, the bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes, till full on his sight a second lamp in the belfry burns. A hurry of hoofs in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath from the pebbles in passing, a spark struck out by a steed flying fearless and fleet. That was all. And yet, through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night. And the spark struck out by that steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He has left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him, tranquil and broad and deep, is the mystic meeting the ocean's tides. And under the alders that skirt its edge, now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog, and felt the damp of the river fog that rises after the sun goes down. It was 1 by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercocks swim in the moonlight as he passed, and the meeting-house windows blank and bare gaze at him with a spectral glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord town. He heard the bleating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadows brown. And one was safe and asleep in his bed, who at the bridge would be first to fall, who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball. You know the rest. In the books you have read how the British regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave them ball for ball from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the fields to emerge again under the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. So through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm. A cry of defiance, and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For born on the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight message of Paul Revere.
Longfellow's poem had an immediate impact, but over the years it also attracted criticism for its historical inaccuracies. Jane Triber explains.
Longfellow definitely took liberties with the historical information on the ride because his intent was not to document history, it was to inspire his fellow Americans on the eve of Civil War. The major misconception about Paul Revere's ride is that it was a mad impulsive dash of this one lone patriot who took it upon himself to race through the countryside, alarming his countrymen. In fact, the midnight ride of Paul Revere was a well-executed intelligence assignment carried out by Paul Revere and a network of other individuals.
That intelligence assignment started weeks earlier when Revere and others scouted the region. On the way back to Boston, he stopped for a meeting at Charlestown, a little community just across the Charles River from Boston.
And he arranged with them, as he describes in his account of the ride, that if the British went out by water, we would show two lanterns in the North Church steeple, and if by land, one as a signal, for we were apprehensive it would be difficult to cross the Charles River or get over Boston Neck. So this is Longfellow's major error. The lantern signals were not to Paul Revere, they were from him. In case he never got out of Boston, a group of patriots from Charlestown were the ones who saw the signal, and they would send a rider from Charlestown. Now, what would happen if Revere didn't get out of Charlestown? Well, everything was thought of. Dr. Warren arranged for another rider, a man named William Dawes, to leave Boston by a longer route, a land route over a narrow strip of land called Boston Neck. So Revere would be rowed across the Charles River, William Dawes would take the longer land route, and then as Plan C, Robert Newman, the sexton of the North Church, would hang lantern signals from the steeple of the church, and a third rider could be dispatched from Charlestown. So it was a very carefully thought-out plan.
Despite the historical liberties, when it was published in 1861, Longfellow's poem galvanized a nation at the start of a civil war and changed the way the country looked at Paul Revere.
To understand the impact of Longfellow's poem, I think we really have to understand Longfellow's standing in American society at this time. He was probably the most widely read poet of his age. Abraham Lincoln read Longfellow, so did Queen Victoria. He was probably an American icon, I would say, and that ensured that there would be a receptive audience for this poem. He had also written Evangeline and the Song of Hiawatha, so his epic poetry was very popular. The poem appeared in the January 1861 issue of Atlantic Monthly, and 2 years later in his book Tales of the Wayside Inn. By the American Centennial, by 1875 and 76, when we were celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Revolution, Longfellow had transformed Paul Revere from a minor revolutionary figure into a household word, into pretty much another one of the founding fathers. And one way of measuring that is, I come from the town of city of Revere, Massachusetts, a suburb of Boston, and it originally was the town of North Chelsea. But then in 1871, a town meeting voted 88-7 to rename their town Revere, in their words, in honor of Paul Revere of revolutionary fame.
Historian Jane Triber, her book, A True Republican, The Life of Paul Revere, is published by the University of Massachusetts Press.